It was both a familiar concept and a completely baffling sight. For all that she'd heard of cats in trees, she'd never actually come across one. She folded her arms, squinted against the too bright, too pale sky, and listened to the creature's plaintive meows. After a moment, she called,
"You sound as though you're stuck."
The cat screeched its affirmative like a miniature murder victim. It was small but wonderfully fat, with fur so grey as to seem almost black, and piercing eyes that said,
"Surely you won't leave me here?"
Chloe sighed.
"Are you sure you can't get down? I don't mean to be rude, but you know how this goes. Some gullible, bleeding heart type clambers into a tree after a cat, only for said cat to leap mischievously down at the last second."
Another shriek, this one blatantly indignant.
"Fair point,"
Chloe conceded. "Just because you appear well doesn't mean you don't require help. I, above all, should know that. I will call the fire brigade for you." The cat meowed some more and glared down at her, a sceptical smudge against the sky. She was now quite certain that it was saying something like,
"The fire brigade, you wasteful cow! Don't you realise we're in an era of austerity? Would you take much-needed public services away from children trapped in bathrooms and old ladies who've left the iron on? For shame!"
This cat, like most of its species, seemed rather judgmental. Chloe didn't mind. She appreciated bluntness in a beastly companion and, well, it had a point. Why should she bother the fire-type people when she had a semi-functional body of her own? Fetching this cat might not be the cleverest way to end her walk, but then, staid, sensible Chloe Brown was dead. New Chloe was a reckless, exciting sort of woman who, in moments of crisis, didn't wait for the assistance of trained professionals. The thought plucked at her like a harpist plucked at strings. She vibrated with ill-advised intent. She would dominate this tree. A decent hand and foothold were required to begin. She knew that from watching a young Danny scamper up and down these things for years. The oak's trunk was both soft and hard under Chloe's hands, its bark crumbly and damp, its core immovable. She liked the contrast, even if it scratched at her palms and threatened to snag on her leggings. Her waterproof jacket made an odd slithery noise as she reached up toward the first branch. Then her fingers closed around a sturdy bough, and she heaved herself up as her feet pushed off the trunk, and everything felt utterly free. Her muscles were still weary and her joints still ached. The only difference was she no longer gave a damn. There was a nasty little voice in her head that warned her she'd pay for this, that her body would demand retribution. She had been practicing telling that voice to F off, and she did so now. The cat's whining spiked as she climbed, and Chloe chose to interpret that as enthusiastic cheerleading.
"Well done, human,"
meowed the cat.
"You're a total badass. You should definitely add this to your get-a-life list so that you can cross it off immediately and feel extra accomplished."
Chloe considered, then discarded the cat's generous suggestion. The get-a-life list was an historical document that she couldn't bring herself to alter.
"Thank you, though,"
she panted, and then worried about the fact that she was panting. Her lungs were working overtime, and every breath felt like the edge of a saw. She had a metallic taste at the back of her mouth that reminded her unpleasantly of blood, and also of the days when she'd had to run laps in PE. Apparently, this climb was wearing her out. But she'd been taking irregular walks for years, damn it. Surely she should be a semi-pro athlete by now. Apparently not. The human body was an inconvenient and unreasonable thing. She kept climbing anyway, and developed a system. She'd drag herself onto a sturdy branch, shuffle along on her bottom, rather undignified, but it couldn't be helped, reach for the next branch, drag herself up, and so on. It worked like a charm and took forever, probably due to her frequent rest breaks. And then, all of a sudden, she got so high that the branches thinned out. Oh dear. Chloe was not petite. She was on the taller side, big-boned and, well, insulated for the winter. Like a rabbit. Except the insulation lasted all year round. Her size wasn't something she often thought about, but as she reached a particularly slender branch, she could suddenly think of nothing but. She eyed the branch suspiciously. Could it take approximately 15 stone of woman? She doubted it.
Cat, she said, or rather wheezed. You might need to come down just a bit. Throw yourself into my arms, perhaps?
She released her death grip on the branch, clenched her core to ensure her balance, and held up encouraging hands.
Come on, then. Leap of faith and all that.
The cat did not look impressed.
I won't drop you, she said. Promise, I'm an excellent catch. I played netball for the county team, you know.
The cat gave her a hard stare. She sighed.
Yes, it was over a decade ago, which is mean of you to point out, by the way.
Perhaps the cat appreciated her honesty, because it extended one delicate paw and seemed to consider a path of descent.
That's the spirit, darling. Down you pop.
With alarming agility, the cat did indeed come down. Chloe was surprised, all things considered, that it didn't leap comfortably out of the tree and leave her behind. Judging by its suddenly silky movements, it must have been able to. And yet, instead of making its escape, it hopped from one branch to the next until it came to rest on her lap, precisely as directed. She stared at the bundle of smoky fur currently nuzzling her stomach. After a moment of astonishment, she choked out,
You can't actually understand me, can you? Because if so, don't worry. I'll protect your secret to the death.
From beneath her, a rough voice punched through the Sunday quiet.
So will I.
She almost fell out of the tree. After that heart-jolting moment, Chloe clutched a nearby bough for balance and blinked down at the source of the words. She found Redford Morgan squinting up at her, his hands in his pockets, his fine mouth curved into what must be a smirk. Oh no, oh no, 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 no. She became uncomfortably aware of the cool, prickly sweat coating her skin, the strands of frizzy hair that had escaped her bun and, oh yes, the fact that she was sitting in a tree talking nonsense to a cat. Ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Embarrassment leaked past her most stalwart defences to flood her cheeks with unwanted heat. She searched for something appropriately cutting to say and discovered that every intelligent thought in her head had evaporated. Gigi's voice came to her, like a divine message.
Keep calm, Chloe, dear, and whatever you bloody do, don't fall.
Sound advice from imaginary Gigi.
Hello, Mr. Morgan,
she croaked, then kicked herself.
Mr. Morgan?
She'd regressed. Redford had been bad enough. At this rate, she wouldn't call him Red until 2056. His strange little smirk widened into a full-blown grin, and she realised that he hadn't been smirking at all. No, he was holding back laughter, his amusement dancing through the air around him like an electrical current. His big body practically vibrated with it. She considered telling him to just get on with it, to laugh at her, since she was sure she made a hilarious picture right now. But before she could work up the words, he spoke again.
Are you stuck, Ms. Brown?
She didn't miss the emphasis he put on her name, as sarcastic as the single eyebrow he raised. Goodness gracious, he'd better stop that. Looking at him was distracting enough. If he started to emote, her brain might short-circuit. Human beings so very vital should not be allowed to roam the streets unsupervised. Someone, Chloe, could die of fascinated envy and sheer self-consciousness.
No,
she said with great dignity.
I am not stuck.
It wasn't necessarily a lie, since she hadn't tried to get down yet.
Are you sure?
He asked, because I wouldn't mind giving you a hand. She snorted. How on earth would he give her a hand down a tree?
Are you on drugs, Mr. Morgan?
His smile turned into a scowl. The expression didn't suit his cat-like eyes or his upturned mouth, which just made it all the more effective.
No,
he said shortly. Then he tutted loudly and shook his head, as if he despaired of her. Actually, he did despair of her. He'd made that rather clear. For some reason, instead of ignoring him to prove how very little she cared, she found herself blurting, "I didn't mean that in a bad way." Which was true, actually. She'd been joking, only jokes had never been Chloe's forte. Something about the delivery? "It's Sunday, after all. No work, few obligations, a perfectly acceptable day for recreational drug use." He blinked up at her, his scowl replaced by bafflement. "Do you take drugs on Sundays, then?" he asked finally.
"I take drugs every day," she said.
Then she remembered that he was the superintendent of her building and added,
"Legal drugs, very legal drugs. Doctor's orders."
His eyebrows flew up. They were the same amber copper shade as his hair, so they stood out starkly against his pale skin. "Is that right?" Time to change the subject. Otherwise he'd start asking questions, and she'd answer out of politeness, and then they'd be sitting there discussing her medical history, as if it were a topic as mundane as the weather.
"Do you know,"
she said, sinking her icy fingers into her troublesome cat friend's fur,
"I think I might be stuck, after all."
He folded his arms. Considering his height, the breadth of his shoulders, and the beaten-up black leather jacket he wore, the overall effect was slightly intimidating.
"Thought you said you weren't."
"Don't be a pain,"
she huffed, then immediately regretted it. The problem was, she was in pain, which tended to shorten her fuse. Her joints were stiff and aching, her lower back was screaming, and during physical catastrophes, her politeness was always the first function to go. But Red, for once, didn't snap back. Instead, he squinted up at her and asked slowly,
"You okay?"
She stiffened.
"Yes."
"Are you hurt?"
"Hurt? No. Hurting. Always."
"Are you going to help me or not?"
she demanded. He rolled his eyes.
"You do know how to charm a fella."
But he unfolded his arms and pushed off his jacket, clearly preparing for action. The leather landed at his feet like a dead thing, which he supposed it technically was, unless it was fake.
"Is that real?"
she asked, nodding toward it. He arched an eyebrow again, the show-off, and approached the tree in his t-shirt and jeans.
"That's what you're worried about right now."
"I'm the sort of person who climbs trees to rescue cats. Clearly, I care deeply about animal welfare."
"You a vegetarian?"
Well, he had her there.
"Not yet."
"Not yet?"
"I'm working on it."
Ethical consumption had been easier at home, where they had a cook. He grinned up at her, grabbed a branch, and started climbing.
"Right, you only eat veal on Sundays, that sort of thing."
"Certainly," she quipped, "which is no worse than doing drugs on Sundays."
"Chloe, I don't do drugs on Sundays."
There. He'd used her name. Now was the perfect time to follow suit and use his, the one everyone else called him, not Redford or Mr. Morgan. But she felt so awkward about it that she couldn't figure out what to say, and in the end, after an uncomfortable pause, she simply blurted out,
"Red!"
And that was it. He hauled himself up another branch. He was much quicker and more graceful than she'd been, the awful man, and cocked his head.
"Yeah?" "Oh, dear.
Do you know this cat?"
His climb continued. She tried not to stare at his hands and his forearms and the way his biceps bunched beneath his shirt as he lifted himself up.
"Why?"
he asked.
"Would I know that cat?"
I'm not sure. You are in a position of authority in the local community."
He eyed her suspiciously. A change light bulbs for old ladies and send out rent reminders.
"Sounds like authority to me."
The cat, which had been purring quietly, chose that moment to meow again. Chloe scratched it between the ears. She appreciated the vocal support.
"Whatever you say,"
Red muttered, and then he was directly beneath her. Proximity to him unnerved her more and more every time they met. which might have something to do with the mountains of guilt she carried after spying on him repeatedly. At least she knew for sure now that he hadn't seen her last night, because if he had, he probably would have left her to die in this tree.
So, is it real?
She asked, mostly to divert her own train of thought. Is what real? He shot back, sounding more than a little exasperated. His voice was gravelly, its cadence oddly musical. His words flowing together in an elision of consonants and shortening of vowels. He sounded as dynamic as he looked.
The leather.
No, Chloe, don't worry. I'm not running around wearing a dead cow all the time. He reached up from the branch beneath her and said, Can you hold my hand? Could she?
Possibly.
Should she? Debatable. His touch might stop her heart like an electric shock. Then again, she was hardly in a position to refuse.
Let me secure the cat,
she mumbled. Fuck the cat, it's playing you like a violin. Her gasp tasted of ice and pollution.
How dare you? This cat is an angel. Look at it. Look.
He looked. His eyes were pale green, like spring pears. He studied the cat thoroughly before saying in very firm tones, That thing could climb down any time it wanted. It's having you on.
You are a heartless man.
Me? He sputtered, as shocked as if she'd accused him of being Queen Victoria. I'm heartless. She drew back, affronted.
Are you trying to suggest that I'm the heartless one?
Well, you did.
Please, don't bring up the post-room incident.
Actually, I was going to bring up the time you made Frank Leonard from 4J cry.
Chloe huffed out a breath. I did not make him cry. He was already teary when the conversation began. It was all a misunderstanding. Really?
Red grunted skeptically.
Honestly, I see no need to rehash the past when I am in a tree selflessly saving a cat.
If you want to make this a competition, he countered, I'm in a tree saving a cat and a woman.
You are absolutely not saving me. Thank you very much.
Oh, shall I get down then?
Fine, throw a tantrum if you must.
Throw it.
Red's incredulity was quickly cut off by a growl.
I'm not doing this with you.
She blinked down at him. Doing what?
Arguing. I don't argue with people.
That sounds dull,
she murmured. You just hurry up before I lose my shit, would you?
You've not already lost it.
Swear to God, Chloe, you got 3 seconds.
He waved the proffered hand around for emphasis. There was a smudge of magenta ink beneath his thumbnail.
Chloe sighed, then picked up the cat to see if it would permit such familiarity. It did.
Reassured, she unzipped her jacket a bit, stuffed the cat inside, zipped it up again.
A furry kitty head rested against the hollow of her throat, a warm body curling up against her chest. The sensation was so wonderful. For a moment, she almost forgot the pain clawing at her senses. She rather liked this cat.
After fiddling for as long as possible, she put on her big girl knickers and reached for the hand awaiting her. It was the third time she had ever touched Redford Morgan. She knew, because the first time, their first handshake, had sent 1,000 tingling darts shooting up her right arm, darts that had dissolved into a strange, pleasurable sensation that was not unlike a muscle relaxant, and she had not approved. The second time, when they'd bumped into each other a few days ago, had only reinforced her decision to avoid all physical contact with the man. Yet here she was, feeling his calloused palm in hers, this time not for a handshake, but a, she reluctantly admitted to herself, rescue. The usual darts of sensation returned. Red didn't appear to be sending them on purpose, so she decided for once not to hold it against him. Sometimes, when she saw him roaming the halls or the courtyard with a heart-rending smile for everyone but her, she wished she had nothing at all to hold against him. Usually, when she'd taken her strongest painkillers and was therefore high as a kite. Can I keep it?
She asked, to distract herself more than anything else. Keep what? He frowned as he helped her climb down. His grip on her was steely. His other hand cupped her elbow. He supported almost all of her weight and pulled her onto a lower branch.
"The cat?"
she said, and concentrated on not falling tragically to her death. "What are you asking me for?" "Put your feet here. Look." She put her feet where she was told. They were now a meter closer to the ground. Red climbed down a little bit, then reached up to help her again.
"I'm asking you,"
she said, as he maneuvered her like a particularly unwieldy doll, "because you are the superintendent, and pets are not allowed." "Oh, yeah. You can't keep it then, can you? On your left now," he added. "Left," I said, "Chloe. Do you know your left and right?"
"Be quiet,"
she muttered, and finally put her feet in the right place.
"Can't you bend the rules due to extenuating circumstances?"
"Extenuating circumstances such as the fact that you're an extra special princess?"
"Precisely.
I knew you'd understand." "How'd you know the cat didn't belong to someone?"
"No collar."
"Still, it..." "Good God, woman. What are you doing?" "This branch. This one."
"Don't get snippy," she muttered.
"Are you trying to break your neck?"
"So dramatic. I'd break an arm at most, of course. It has occurred to me that if I landed poorly, I could break my neck at any height. Especially since, as I'm holding a cat, I'd probably twist to avoid squashing the poor thing to death."
She paused, considered. "But that's a worst-case scenario. I'm sure we don't need to worry about it." Red halted his steady descent to stare at her. Then, from out of nowhere, he burst into laughter. It was a short, bright sound, accompanied by a stunning smile, and she enjoyed it an unhealthy amount. She decided to ignore him and focus on studying the branches below. When she craned her neck a touch too vigorously, her body responded with a stab of pain through her shoulder blade. He, being a certified nuisance, noticed her slight wince and abruptly stopped laughing. Those sharp eyes excavated her expression. She'd seen him look at one of his paintings just like this, shortly before picking it up and throwing it against a wall. He said, "Something's wrong with you." She flinched. Her chest cracked wide open.
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"You sure you didn't hurt yourself? Seems like you're in pain." "Oh, of course." She shook her head, avoiding his gaze, her tension easing away.
"It's nothing."
After a slight pause, he continued their descent.
"You know," he said conversationally, "I think we're about the same age. I too enjoyed the era of Xena Warrior Princess and Captain Janeway."
"How nice for you."
"Just because I'm rescuing you."
"Incorrect."
"Like a proper knight in shining armour. Don't mean I think you're all, you know, damsel in distress-like."
Chloe huffed out a breath, a cloud of air pluming from her nostrils, definitely more dragon than damsel.
"Point?"
"Point is, if you've hurt yourself, I'm not going to be a prick about it."
"Oh?"
she asked through gritted teeth.
"Yeah, like I won't insist you come back to mine so I can have a look at you."
"Good."
"But I will suggest that you let me see you home and get you settled and make you a cuppa to warm you up."
Before she could quite get her head around that, he said, "Here we are then," and jumped down. When his booted feet hit the ground, she realised they'd done it. They'd finished. Well, almost. She was crouched awkwardly on the last branch. She wondered how badly the landing would hurt her already screaming bones. Red smiled up at her. It was the kind of sweet and effortlessly handsome smile that heartthrobs deployed in rom-coms, and she didn't trust it an inch.
"Want me to catch you?"
"I'd rather die."
He shrugged, put his hands in his pockets, and started humming "Devil Woman." She clutched the cat against her chest and jumped. Coincidentally, landing felt a little bit like dying. Her body had become a giant bruise. She swallowed a thousand curses, breathed through the urge to vomit, and felt like the silliest woman on earth. Why in God's name had she done this to herself? The cat licked the hollow of her throat, its sandpaper tongue warming her shriveled heart. Ah, yes, she'd done this because she was a pathetic ninny. Red didn't bother to hide his concern. "You okay?" For once, the apartment building sweetheart was turning his nice guy brand of nosiness her way. It might have been satisfying if she'd actually wanted his attention. With great effort, she straightened up and attempted to smile. It felt more like a grimace. He winced at the sight as if horrified. She stopped.
I'm fine. Goodbye.
With that 100% believable lie expertly deployed, she made her escape. It was slow and steady, with little dignity, great pain, and greater determination. Being rescued from trees was all well and good, but she didn't need a rescue from herself. Chapter 4 Red let Chloe limp off to her flat with a cat stuffed down her jacket. Then he found the motorbike he'd dumped shortly after spotting her, parked it, and settled in for a thrilling evening of minding his own damn business. He lasted about 5 minutes before grabbing his ring of master keys, turning up at her door, and knocking. If she didn't answer, he'd assume she'd fainted or some shit and let himself in. He was only checking on her because she was a tenant. Making sure she hadn't hurt herself was his job. The fact that she'd climbed up a tree to save a cat and bantered with him in a weird, stuck-up posh girl kind of way meant absolutely nothing. She was an unrepentant snob who'd possibly spied on him last night. He didn't give a fuck about her sarcastic sense of humour or the cute little cardigan she wore or her fantastic bloody face. But on a regular human concerned about another human level, he really wished she'd answer the door. He knocked one more time, raked a hand through his hair, and started worrying. When she'd left, her mouth had been tight, her skin grey beneath a sheen of sweat. Her words had grown rushed, strained, even sharper than usual. She'd moved stiffly, her body hunched with something more than cold. It was obvious she had some tree-related injury and didn't want to admit it, but Red was not above bullying it out of her. He had plenty of practice, bullying his mother after all. He was reaching for his key when the door finally opened a crack. A large dark eye peered suspiciously out at him. Red arched an eyebrow. Where are your glasses?
You're a very nosy man, she said. What do you want?
Word on the street is, you've got a cat in there. She looked him right in the eye and said,
Mr. Morgan, would I ever?
His lips twitched into a smile he didn't want to give. I think I'll check, if you don't mind.
I mind awfully.
Still, though. With a sigh gustier than a hurricane, she let him in. Chloe was one of those women who always looked tidy. Even up a tree, she'd been in colour-coordinated walking gear that could only be called appropriate. So the state of her home made him stop in his tracks. She didn't appear to notice. She was too busy shuffling down the hall, dodging empty bottles of water lined up like bowling skittles and what seemed to be countless Amazon Prime delivery boxes. He picked his way through the chaos and followed her into an equally disordered living room, where fancy furniture was covered with pillows, books, empty mugs, and video game cases that said PS4 on the front. Oh, and then there was the cat. It lay, stretched across the glass coffee table, surrounded by a rainbow of prescription medication. Chloe picked up the boxes of pills, ignored the cat, and asked,
Happy?
He stared. The cat's right there.
I've no idea what you're talking about.
She hesitated, then took a nervous little breath. He wondered if she was about to confess to murder. Instead, she said,
I don't suppose you'd make some tea? Lavender for me, please.
He stared.
Did she really think he would?
Well, holy fuck. The balls on this woman. Used to servants, are you?
Oh, yes, she said.
It took him 3 solid seconds and 1 aborted scowl to realise that she was joking. Chloe Brown had just made yet another joke in that deadpan, oddly self-deprecating way of hers, which she really had to stop doing because he was starting to enjoy it. She turned to leave the room while he questioned his grip on reality.
If you hear any ominous bangs, she called, knock. If I don't respond, you can rush in to my rescue.
Knock.
he echoed blankly. On the bathroom door?
She told him, as if he was being particularly thick.
I've decided to use your presence as supervision.
Super?
Too late. She'd disappeared, mountain of medication in hand.
All right, then,
Red said to the empty living room. The cat meowed.
Shut it, you. If she's hurt herself, you're to blame.
The cat was blatantly unrepentant. Red went to make the tea. The kitchen was comparatively tidy and reasonably clean. It had a few additions to the standard outfit, too. Most notably a dishwasher, sleek and quietly efficient, which he had not authorised. She also had a plush little seat, the kind found at fancy bars, placed randomly by the oven.
Odd.
She had countless different flavours of tea, plus some PG tips, thank Christ, all in the usual place. No milk in the fridge, but there was an army of juice cartons in there, plus a ton of stacked-up Tupperware boxes. Those boxes were filled with salad, chicken, tuna, sliced cheese and more, like a little pre-chopped buffet. Someone was looking after her. Or she did all this herself because she was proper anal. Red looked out at her tornado of a living room and decided that the first option seemed more likely. Now, why would someone look after Chloe Brown? Maybe she was a spoiled brat. Maybe she needed the help sometimes. Maybe he should mind his own business and make the fucking tea. He made it, helped himself to the biscuit tin as payment, enjoyed what appeared to be a homemade ginger snap, and grabbed a couple more. In the living room, he spotted empty packets of fancy chocolate among all the rubble. If he was going to bring Chloe Brown food, which he would never do, he'd bring something sweet. She seemed like a sweet sort of woman. And he seemed like he'd lost his mind. He made space for the tea on the table, between rubbish and cats, and perched on the sofa, beside a PlayStation controller and a spray of shiny business cards. The cat didn't seem particularly interested in the tea, but Red kept half an eye out, even as he studied the cards. Sublime Design Online, web design, SEO, social media branding, and more. Chloe's details were on the back. Fancy that. He needed a website. Apparently, she made them. Not that he'd ever hire her. Ideally, he'd prefer a web designer he didn't want to strangle.
Nosy, nosy, nosy,
Chloe said. He looked up to find her leaning against the doorway, not in a casually charming sort of way, but in a can't stand up straight sort of way. He leapt to his feet.
Are you all right?
Absolutely. Are you eating my biscuits? He shoved the last one in his mouth and mumbled,
Nah.
I saw you.
I see the cat.
Point taken. Her walk toward him was slow and painful to watch. She moved like someone who'd taken a beating. If he hadn't helped her safely down that tree himself, he'd assume she'd fallen. She was wearing her glasses now, at least, along with an enormous pink dressing gown and a pair of equally enormous bunny ear slippers. The slippers surprised him until he remembered that Chloe used cuteness to disguise her inner evil, sort of like Professor Umbridge. Except he couldn't imagine Professor Umbridge saving a cat from a tree. Never mind, he'd think about that later. Her eyes seemed a little too bright and unfocused. Her hair was down, floating around her face in fluffy waves that reminded him of thunderclouds. She patted at it self-consciously with hands that shook.
For fuck's sake.
He barely resisted the urge to pick her up and carry her off to bed. I didn't want her to take it the wrong way. He also didn't want to care about her problems, but he knew himself well enough to realise that he'd care for a great white shark if given half the chance. He helped. Always. He just couldn't help himself.
You shouldn't barge into people's homes, she said, if you can't cope with a minor state of undress.
He sat down, realising that he'd been staring. She seemed embarrassed by the scrutiny.
Sorry. I'm fine. I'm an intrepid home barger. Don't worry about me.
I wasn't. She collapsed onto the mammoth sofa like a sack of potatoes, surrounding him with a cloud of soft floral scent.
Give me the tea, would you?
He gave her the tea. She cradled it like a baby and sipped with obvious relief. He watched her as closely as he could, which was pretty fucking close, and Red noticed things, like the faint V between her eyebrows, the grimace she couldn't quite fight, the moisture that gleamed on her throat and collarbone, maybe left over from the shower, as if she hadn't dried off fully. The bare curve of her calves, visible beneath the hem of her dressing gown. That last part wasn't relevant to his suspicions, so he didn't know why his mind got stuck on it. Whatever. Finally, he asked, "Are you going to admit that you're hurt?"
"I am not hurt," she said. "I am in pain."
Her voice was bright, in a dangerous sort of way, like a knife flashing in the sunlight. Like she was 10 seconds and one irritating question away from skewering him. He used his most patient, judgment-free tone. "Difference being..."
"I'm always in pain, Mr. Morgan, especially when I do ridiculous things like climb trees for ungrateful cats."
"Red," he corrected absently, while puzzle pieces slotted together in his mind. "Chronic pain." She looked up at him, clearly surprised. "What? I know things." Her eye roll could only be described as epic.
"How wonderful for you."
That, apparently, was the end of that. She didn't seem inclined to explain further, and if she wasn't hiding some urgent injury, the whole thing was none of his business. He told himself that very firmly. "None of my business, none of my business, none of my fucking business." She'd have people to call when she needed them, the way his mum called him when she fucked up her insulin. There was no reason for him to hang around any longer. But he should finish his tea, shouldn't he? It wouldn't be polite to leave it. He sat and stared out of the window, sipping his almost cold brew. Beside him, Chloe did the same. He could see his own window through hers across the narrow courtyard, could see his abandoned easel and even a few naked canvases piled around the room. Prime, spying position this was. He gulped down the last of his tea and looked over to find that her eyes were closed, her face slack. "You want me to bugger off so you can sleep?"
"I'm not tired," she said instantly. "I'm just resting my eyes."
Since that was clearly bullshit, he should leave. Did he find himself hanging around and blurting out pointless crap like, "So, you're a web designer?"
"Yeah,"
she murmured. She was so quiet, her usual snap-crackle flame extinguished, that he found himself wanting to bring it back any way he could, even if that meant pissing her off. "Wouldn't have thought you'd bother with the job, what with your family being loaded and all."
It worked, kind of.
She cracked open one eye like a sunbathing lizard and managed to look haughty while doing it.
"You don't know my family is wealthy."
He snorted. "You're going to tell me they're not?" She closed the eye. "So, why do you work?" he asked, not because he was genuinely curious, but because he wanted to keep her lively. That was all. She sighed.
"Perhaps the monthly amount I receive from the trust is not enough to keep me in sea salt chocolate and tea. Or maybe I'm addicted to ordering antique Beanie Babies for thousands from eBay. It is possible that all my clothes have tiny diamonds sewn into the seams."
He couldn't help himself. He laughed. "You're so fucking unexpected." Like maybe she wasn't the vicious snob he'd once assumed. Like maybe she was just an awkward, sarcastic grump, and he should stop losing his temper around her. Christ, he didn't even have a temper unless he was around her. And he'd learned the hard way that letting a woman fuck with his contentment was a stepping stone on the way to bad shit. Maybe that was why he found himself saying, "Just so happens that I need a website." "Really?" Her tone was dry as sandpaper, but somehow he could tell that she was interested. Maybe that was just wishful thinking. "You're probably one of the posher designers, right? Bet you charge out the arsehole."
"Indeed, I do."
She opened her eyes and something zipped up his spine when their gazes met. It was hot and cold all at once, unexpected and unexplainable. He was still trying to figure it out when she added, "Since you're being so decent about the cat, I might give you a discount." Red arched an eyebrow. "What cat?" The tilt of her lips was so tiny, it could barely be called a smile. If he did decide to call it a smile, well, it would be the first time she'd ever smiled at him, not that he'd been keeping track.
"This is only until we find the owners, mind,"
he added quickly. Her not smile widened like a waxing moon. "It has no collar."
"Don't look like a stray to me, though. It'll be chipped."
"I'll find out," she said.
"Good. And keep it inside, yeah?"
"I'll see if one of my sisters has time for an emergency kitty litter run." Red sighed, resigned to the pitfalls of his own nature.
"I'll do it."
She gave him one of her usual looks, all irritated and snooty. He was trying not to bristle when she followed up with actual words, words he really hadn't expected. "You're so lovely," she scowled. "I don't think I can stand it." He blinked, an unsettling warmth creeping up the back of his neck, which meant, bugger this skin of his, that he must be flushing like a teenager. He looked away and shoved his fingers through his hair. His voice was gruff when he said, "It's nothing." There was a pause before she laughed, the sound low and disbelieving. "Oh my goodness, you blush." "Nope." He knew full well his face was bright red, but he lied anyway. "You do? This is hilarious. I should compliment you more often." "Please," he said wryly, "don't." Clearly he couldn't take it. "Fine. I promise to be consistently awful." She smiled, really smiled. It was bright and lopsided and absolutely stunning. It only lasted for a second, but he saw the impression of it behind his eyelids, the way he might see a firework that had gone out. Then she frowned and raised her fingers to her lips, as if she was confused by her own moment of happiness, which, aside from anything else, was pretty fucking depressing. She looked at him, her eyes narrow and considering, like he was some kind of lab rat. "Alive," she murmured under her breath. His eyebrows rose. "Pardon?" She cocked her head.
I do believe I have a proposition for you."
There was nothing seductive in her tone, but the words sent a twisted kick of something through his chest. He'd watched too many rubbish spy films where propositions always ended in blowjobs. "What's up?"
"It's a rather long story."
She bit her lip. "Actually, never mind the story, you don't need to hear it. The short version is that I need to ride a motorbike." He'd have been less surprised if she'd gone with a blowjob thing. Chloe Brown, motorbike, didn't really compute. He racked his brain for a passable response and finally came up with,
"Okay."
She nodded. "And you, obviously, have a motorbike."
"Yeah, I do."
"Would you like a free consultation?
For your website?"
"I might."
"Then it's settled."
She closed her eyes again.
"I'll give you one, and you'll take me for a ride. Do you mind if we handle the details another time? As it turns out, I am rather tired."
He opened his mouth to say something like, "No, wait a fucking minute." But all that came out was,
"I'll be in touch."
That's what she said. "I'll be in touch." Like she'd just interviewed him for the position of motorbike chauffeur and would let him know how he'd done in due time. Christ, she was so far up her own arse it was a miracle she could see the sun.
"Bye-bye,"
she added. He was stuck between telling her to piss off, remembering that she was a tenant, and wanting to die of laughter. Then she cracked open one lid and said suspiciously,
"You're not one of those men, are you? Because you'd be surprised by how loud I can scream. Years of vocal training."
Red stood. Nope, don't worry. Going."
"Thank you,"
she murmured. He went. 10 minutes later, He was in his own living room / studio, watching Chloe rest her eyes through the window. She looked pretty fucking asleep to him, but that was none of his business. He just wanted to check that the cat hadn't curled up on her face and suffocated her or something. Cats couldn't be trusted, as Vikram was telling him through the phone.
Nasty little buggers. They piss behind sofas, you know.
Red ran a hand through his hair and turned away from the window.
If you say so. Look, it's just until we find the owners. One from Wandy grabbed the thing out of a tree, so she's not about to chuck it over to the RSPCA.
Wandy? Vic mused. Red shouldn't have mentioned specifics. Vic was too clever for his own good and had a fantastic memory.
Ain't that the one you were always moaning about?
Red glared at thin air.
Always.
Always. Nope.
Alicia!
Vic bellowed.
Red's on about the rich bird from Wandy again.
In the distance, he heard Vic's wife holler back.
Oh, he isn't. Tell him to bloody shut up about her.
See?
Fuck off.
Vic sighed dramatically. There's no shame in having a type, mate. The posh ones never did it for me, but Vic, your tastes leave a lot to be desired.
Vic,
1 month and the cat's got to go,
Vikram said, smoothly changing the subject. Thank Christ.
And don't let it out of the flat. If anyone sees it, there'll be hell on earth.
That's what I told her. I'm dropping some litter off in a bit.
Oh, yeah. She can't get it herself.
Well, no, she probably couldn't. I'm the superintendent.
Right,
Vic snorted.
That's exactly why.
Yep.
Not like you're soft on her.
Not bloody likely.
You know me, I'm soft on everyone.
True enough, mate. True enough.
Red put the phone down. He spent the rest of the day avoiding his window. Chapter 5. Chloe's youngest sister played 5 different instruments, but her greatest asset was her voice. Eve Brown had, as Gigi would say with great significance, lungs. So when she burst into Chloe's flat, belting out Defying Gravity, like Idina Menzel on Broadway, the cat reacted as if an earthquake had hit. Chloe watched her placid companion fly into a state of major feline alarm. She'd learned, since rescuing it a couple of days ago, that this particular cat was not like most others. It lacked all grace and spatial awareness, as evidenced by its current path of evacuation. Streaking off in the direction of the bedroom, it managed to hit the sofa, the base of a standing lamp, and the doorframe before making good its escape. Chloe had decided that this nervous clumsiness marked the two of them as a fated pair. She had also, in moments of exhaustion or panic, been known to bump into a door several times on her way through. Eve bounded into the now catless living room and trilled,
"We come bearing snacks."
Then, seeing Chloe's wince, she removed one of her ever-present AirPods and stage-whispered,
"Oh, sorry, do you have a headache?"
"No."
"She's lying," Danny said, appearing in the doorway with far too many shopping bags. She wore a fluffy grey hat to protect her shaved head from the cold.
"I always know when you're lying, Chloe. I've no idea why you bother.
Tea?"
Chloe rolled her eyes and snuggled deep into the nest she'd made on the sofa.
"Is it tea? Or is it one of your bush concoctions?"
Danny waggled her eyebrows menacingly and raised the shopping bags.
"Don't worry, darling. Evie baked devil's fruit cake to make the medicine go down."
10 minutes later, Chloe was indeed armed with a steaming mug of mysterious spicy liquid and a fat slice of gooey chocolate cake. She shoved the latter into her mouth with shameless enthusiasm and let her eyes roll back. Headache be damned.
"This is divine."
"I made it just for you,"
Eve said, and patted Chloe's knee like a concerned mother. It had been 3 days since the grand climb, and Chloe had been on the sofa throughout because her body was throwing a tantrum. Her sisters, being painfully nosy, had finally caught wind and had therefore descended upon her to treat her like a baby. It was mildly irritating and simultaneously endearing, because it involved both pats and heavenly chocolate cake.
"Thank you. You're a very good baker."
"I'll put that in the window of my cake shop one day,"
Eve said brightly.
I am a good baker. My sister says so.
Chloe raised her brows.
Cake shop?
That's the latest plan, Danny called from the hallway. But don't ask her about it or she'll start whining about the tyranny of sceptical parents who refuse their daughter's business loans. And you know I can't stand her spoiled brat routine. Ignoring their youngest sister's outraged gasp, Danny marched back into the room with a hissing cat in her grip. Now, she said, holding up the squirming bundle of fur, is this the creature you rescued?
No,
Chloe murmured.
That's one of the countless other cats I acquired 2 days ago.
Shut up. Danny squinted into a pair of narrow feline eyes, her expression stern, her jaw set. She had a habit of grinding her teeth when she was concentrating especially hard. Finally, she ended the interspecies staring contest and announced, I judge this cat to be a boy.
Excellent, Chloe said, quite satisfied. We'll name him Smudge. Oh, Chloe,
Evie tutted,
you ought to name him Cat, like Holly Golightly.
The nerve of her little sisters. Bossy boots, the lot of them. With a withering glare, Chloe said, don't tell me how to raise my children. His name is Smudge. The end. Wonderful. Danny set Smudge down, and he ran off in a blur of smoke. After a minor collision with the table leg, he was gone. Danny snorted and slipped into their old Nana's patois.
Infried like puss.
Of everything, Chloe admitted. I think that's why he was stuck in the tree, actually. He could have gotten down, but he was too scared. The air in the room changed, excited grins blooming like flowers, all eyes turning to Chloe.
Oh, yes, Evie sang, leaning back against the cushions. The tree that you climbed like a badass. Care to share?
Ah. Chloe smiled coyly.
It was rather impressive, she murmured, feigning modesty.
Do tell, Danny drawled from her position sprawled out on the floor. Honestly, the woman was allergic to chairs. She was also good at ferreting out lies. But would she notice a minor, read huge and ginger, omission? Hopefully not, because Chloe had no intention of bringing up Red's role in the palaver. I saw the cat, I got the cat. It was all very athletic. I climbed that tree like Lara Croft.
With sweaty cleavage and frequent strangely sexual grunts,
Danny mused.
With effortless expertise, Chloe corrected, inaccurately. I'm sure you were quite Byronic, Eve said.
There was a short pause before Chloe deciphered that one.
Darling, do you mean heroic? No.
Danny rolled her eyes. Regardless. I'm glad you did it. Climbed the tree, I mean. Sorry that it triggered a spell, but also glad.
Are you really, Danny?
Chloe narrowed her eyes, all suspicion, because it was part of my plan to be fabulously reckless and extremely exciting. And a little birdie tells me that you have a personal investment in my failure. Oh, don't be like that, darling. It's only £50. Of course I'd rather lose, and anyway, I don't remember cat rescuing or tree climbing being on the list. Am I wrong?
No,
Chloe admitted. This was an extracurricular activity. Well then, my £50 is safe. But what will you do about the cat, long term? Pets aren't allowed here, are they?
I've made a temporary arrangement with the superintendent,
Chloe said, then mentally kicked herself. Her sisters predictably collapsed into a chorus of lustful shrieks and sighs.
Red!
Evie said with such feeling, you'd think she and the superintendent were Romeo and Juliet made flesh.
Redford Morgan,
Danny purred, vixenish in a way Chloe had never mastered. Danica Brown was a left-wing academic and amateur spiritualist who shaved her head because hair is just so much effort. But beneath it all, she took after Gigi. If Danny had been the one rescued from a tree by a handsome man, or woman, for that matter, well, she'd have secured said rescuer's affections by the time they hit the ground.
How
did you broker this deal?
Eve asked innocently, fluttering her lashes. She offered her body, of course. Danny grinned.
Oh, be quiet, the both of you. I'm not so desperate as that. Because sleeping with that man would be such torture.
Eve snorted.
He is sex on a stick, Chloe, and he's so sweet.
Sweet? Clearly you barely know him.
Which is why I'm not yet pregnant with his babies. What's your excuse?
Her excuse, Danny said, is that he's so hot he short-circuits her little robot brain.
My robot brain is huge, thank you very much,
Chloe sniffed,
and he does not short-circuit anything.
Danny gave a slow smile, an action that had been known to cause proposals, jealous fistfights, and in one notable case, a minor car accident.
Wonderful, she purred. In that case, I expect you to sleep with him as soon as possible. Isn't sex on your list?
Chloe narrowly avoided choking to death on her own astonishment.
It is!
Eve piped up.
Oh, go on, Chloe, shag him, tell us all about it.
Good gracious, sisters were a nightmare.
Men, Chloe said firmly, are not for me.
Especially not that man. I wouldn't know what to do with him. But her mind proposed several heroic suggestions, and her mouth went dry. Danny cocked her head. Finally decided to try women. Wonderful.
I am trying no one. Thank you very much.
Clearly her subconscious needed the reminder as much as her sisters did.
Why not?
Eve demanded, her romantic nature clearly offended.
You know why not. Clearly I don't.
Sigh.
It's too much work. I can't be bothered.
Two sets of dark, unimpressed eyes speared her. She doubled down.
It's very awkward, dating while disabled. People can be quite awful, and you know I don't have much energy to spare for social nonsense. Social nonsense? Eve snorted. I swear, Chloe, you are so full of it.
Eve clearly didn't realise that social nonsense was Chloe's succinct way of phrasing the constant disappointment that is human nature. She'd learned the hard way that people were always looking for a reason to leave, that affection or adoration or promises of devotion turned to dust when things got tough. Losing Henry had shown her that. Waking up one day to realise that her friends, bored with lists and rain checks and careful coping mechanisms, had left her behind, that had been unnecessary emphasis on a painful lesson. Chloe's family was abnormal in their loyalty, and she loved them for it, but they didn't seem to understand that others couldn't be trusted. Better to be alone than to be abandoned. She refused to let that happen again. But if she explained those facts, her sisters would insist she'd simply had a bad experience, then start insulting everyone who'd ever left her. And then Chloe would be forced to remember all the things she'd lost and to wonder for the thousandth time what it was about her that made her so easy to leave. It was time to change the subject, and also her pyjamas. Pushing off her blankets and rising to her feet caused a moment of dizziness, but she'd been ready for that. She waited. The encroaching blackness faded.
There,
she smiled, pleased with herself.
Right as rain.
Danny looked up in alarm. Where are you going?
I'm just popping into the shower. Won't be long.
That was an unrepentant lie. She would indeed be long, and everyone present knew it.
Would you like some help? Eve asked.
I'm not that bad. Chloe rolled her eyes and left her sisters in the living room. As she peeled off her worn-in pyjamas and settled into the bathroom's plastic shower seat, she thanked God for the disability aids all ground floor flats came with. After grabbing her shampoo and conditioner, she switched on the water and tipped her head back under the spray. It had been a frustrating few days. She'd fallen into an infuriating cycle when she'd climbed that tree. Physical overload led to pain and a complete dearth of spoons, also known as mind-numbing exhaustion, which led to extra meds and insomnia, which led to sleeping pills and too much brain fog, which led to, in a word, misery. When she found herself trapped in that cycle, Chloe was supposed to do certain things. Things like socializing with all her non-existent friends, despite her inability to brush her teeth and change out of her pajamas. Things like forcing her battered body into excruciating Pilates positions because it was so good for the muscles. Things like meditation, presumably so that she could think more deeply about how much she resented her own nerve endings. These, obviously, were the suggestions of specialist consultants who were rather clever but had never lived inside a body in constant crisis. What Chloe actually did to cope was take her medication religiously, write fanciful lists, play The Sims, and live through it. Sometimes it was hard, but she managed by whatever means necessary. Right now, her aches and pains had faded to a low background hum, and her mind felt clearer than it had in ages. She scrubbed the 3 days' fever sweat from her scalp, smiling as she fingered the cute little kinks growing out at her roots. It was almost time for another chemical relaxer. She didn't have the endurance to care for her natural texture, pretty as it was. After conditioning, she lathered herself with entirely too much scented soap, standing long enough to rinse all the necessary bits. She watched the water send white suds sliding over her skin, like clouds moving over the earth. When she was sick and tired of being sick and tired, she clung to moments like this, the first shower after a flare-up. Bliss should be held on to with both hands. Sometime later, Chloe was clean and dry and neatly outfitted in a tea dress and matching jumper, though her jumpers were all designed to look like cardigans. She liked the little buttons, but her fingers couldn't always handle slipping them in and out of holes. Her glasses were freshly polished, and her hair was in a sleek bun. She'd taken her anti-inflammatories, her weakest painkillers, and the pills that protected her stomach lining from the damage caused by her other